Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Strategic Planning Committee meeting for January 31st, 2023. My name is Pete Knox. I'm starting the meeting off in lieu of Alma, who's hopefully will be here soon. So my first thing to do is we'll go through roll call as we start the agenda. Almost not here. Let's see here. Marianne.
I am here.
Excellent. Mike Heister.
Here.
Vidal Flores. Am I pronouncing that right? Don't see him. Greg F.
Here.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Philip? Okay. Leonard? No. We got Elaine? No. Bacon? We have a couple absences. Heather is no longer on the committee. Leah is no longer. Hooper Chamberlain. No. Kathy Dunning. Susan Cox is not here. I'm here. And how about Martin? You here?
Martin was not able to make it.
Two dozen auto issues. Oh, I see it already. Sorry. Okay. Well, that's a roll call. Do we have a quorum?
No. We also are not anticipating taking any action on any of the agenda items other than officer elections tonight. So we could postpone officer elections until we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, I'd like to welcome any CATC members that are here. This is your first SBC meeting with the combined committee. And welcome everybody else and anybody who's in the public. Thank you for joining us as well. All right, let's see here. Any additions to the agenda? No? All right. Let's see here. Audience participation, do we have anybody?
No?
Not at this time. Okay. All right, so we're going to skip officer elections. So that'd be our next item. So we will go right to community outreach and communications assessment. Jim, Tom.
That would be me, thank you. So tonight, what I want to do is cover a couple of things related to this project. One is, I want to start off with talking a little bit about the state of Oregon's goal one. That's a really good background for what we're trying to achieve here and what we're shooting for. I'll then go over the goals of the project. And we will also talk about the scope and schedule, which is attached in the packet, and then talk a little bit more about what the product is, what we're trying to get out of this, and entertain any questions that folks might have. To start with, I think I've mentioned this before. Many of you are probably aware that Oregon has a set of land use laws that have been in place for over 50 years. And the first goal, the first goal for these land use goals is Oregon statewide citizen involvement. And dating back 50 years, the state has specified that citizen involvement efforts led by federal, state, regional, and special purpose districts like LTD should be widespread, easily understood, well-funded, leading to effective two-way communication between citizens and elected and appointed officials. And if you are the kind of person that looks at administrative rules, you would find that they serve a clear purpose, which is to allow citizens to participate in and influence outcomes in all phases of public projects. So that's a foundation for us to start with. And so as we talk about the work that we want to accomplish with respect to the the Community Outreach Communications Assessment, or lovingly called COCA project, keep that in mind. That's really what we're trying to strive for. I think those are very aggressive and well-considered goals. With respect to what the specific goals are, for the project, those are included in your packet, but I'll just review for you. The goals of the project are to assess and evaluate community experience and expectations related to public processes, public involvement, and organizational performance transparency. To evaluate past outreach efforts, including Moving Ahead, Mobility Strategy, Transit Tomorrow, and others. Three, identify gaps between what the community expectations are and how our efforts have been conducted. Then we want to look at the gaps between those, right? If we're missing the mark, how are we missing the mark? How can we make improvements? And then based on that work, we want to develop a plan for future community outreach that's echoing the goals or the goal one that I said, informed by broad stakeholder input, is scalable and useful for projects large and small. We want to create tools to help staff assess when and to what degree public outreach and community participation will be helpful for transparency and community buy-in. And this would apply to not just the long-range projects like Moving Ahead and Transit Tomorrow and others, but also all of our process, any process that touches the public, our annual budgeting and process like that. We're trying to create a consistent framework across all our efforts. And so those are the goals. And I would say, the last thing is, based on all that, we want to aspire to be outstanding implementer of services designed with and for the communities we serve. And that echoes something that I want to talk about further, perhaps not tonight, but at some point, related to co-creating. We're actually going to the board tomorrow night to talk more about this concept of co-creating. So what I wanted to do is just step through the scope of work so you know what's happening. And I can say tonight that we use the scope of work to go through a procurement process. And I don't know, it was last week, perhaps, we were able to sign the contract with a group called Infra Strategies. And I can tell you more about that group, but they're I couldn't have asked for a better group. This is not one of your run-of-the-mill regular things that we do all the time. This is a unique project. And so to find someone that fits us like that is fantastic. So just briefly, I'll go through the scope and then ask if you have any questions. The first task is to review and evaluate examples of our communications and public involvement practices, establish initial themes and findings to be used in subsequent tasks. So just taking a look at again, the various projects and processes that we have. And I'd encourage you to take a look at this scope of work, because it really tells a lot about kind of what we're trying to do. I won't go into all the details, I'll just go kind of at the task level. We want to then do outreach and engagement. And again, this isn't sequential. It'll be kind of in parallel to these tasks. And I think I've mentioned before, we're looking to stand up a community-led council envisioned to help shape the new framework for involving the public in LT's projects and processes. And so we're going to work with the consultant that we have to establish, you know, the practical size for this group, but it's intended to try and represent as you know, many of the varied voices in the community as we can in a practical sense. We anticipate that this group would meet on probably a monthly basis, at least over a 10-month period to kind of get from where we want to start to where we need to go. We have been out talking to a wide range of groups about potential membership. The two count or the two chambers in town, the city managers, the county commissioner, and BEST. We talked to BEST, and we'll have other conversations there. But we're using input from those folks to try and populate this committee. And I will say it's. With great thanks that I've asked Alma to play the role of chair for this committee, and she's agreed to do that. Right, you're still on. So we'll be talking more, and I think we want to look at kind of how we're set up, but I envision at least some representation from SPC. We haven't really talked with the board about this, but there may be board involvement on this committee as well. Again, that's the makeup of that committee. We're then going to do some community outreach framework development. So that community outreach framework is what the final product is. And so we're going to start, based on the conversations we're having with the committee, we're going to start developing this framework. The goal is to develop and present a framework that provides best-in-class standards for future community outreach and public involvement led by the district. That community outreach framework would then be considered, there'd be input on it from the community, but then ultimately the board would adopt this process, this framework. So any questions people have?
It seems to me like it's always a challenge to, it's so important to have community input, and it's always a challenge to get community members to break away from all the things that the soccer games, the babysitting, the,
yeah,
you know, all the other committees that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it seems like your idea of approaching stakeholder groups may be one way to kind of guarantee or somewhat ensure some participation. I know how frustrating it has been for LTD or for me when I was on the board to spend a lot of time and energy and effort getting input, and then as a project would get closer and closer to implementation, people would come forward and say, nobody consulted with us.
Yeah.
And so it's a difficult problem. And I hope that we can find a way to have people not only engage, but to feel as though they were engaged.
Yes, absolutely. Good comment. Any other comments or questions?
I guess I would just say to kind of bookend that on the other side, that I think it's critical to gather the community's feedback, absolutely. But I think there's been a tendency in the past to kind of not let that phase end. And so when things like Transit Tomorrow is an example, that we kind of were still engaging the public even when we had made the decisions and things were ostensibly moving forward. And so I think if the communications plan also says we're gathering feedback for this time, but then once we've made the decision, we're going to carry forward with the work. I think just kind of putting a bookend on it at some point is also important to being able to move forward.
Thanks, Marianne. That's a great comment. Any other comments or questions for me at this point? We will be coming back to the group on an ongoing basis on this. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. And thank you, Pete, for kicking us off today as I came in. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to our ride source operations analysis update. John.
All right, thanks. Welcome. Thanks to members of the committee. So this is going to be a separate process from the comprehensive operations analysis that we're also undertaking. So this is the ride source operations analysis that I'll be speaking to specifically. This is also not the first time we've actually undergone an RFP for this service. So I'll just be speaking to it briefly today in preparation for upcoming and future presentations where we'll have more detail or more of this work completed. So we're currently undergoing our second round of request for proposals for this, for consultants to assist us with the ride source operations analysis. The first RFP actually closed in that would have been July of 22. We didn't receive any responses to that RFP. So we made sure to do some debrief and consultation afterwards. What we learned was the scope itself, the scope of work for the ride source operations analysis, that it was appealing to many prospective bidders, but it just the timing wasn't right. So as we've seen in many different services throughout the pandemic, people have more than enough work to do. And so having another consulting project on the table, many of the organizations we would normally partner with just said we have full plates for the next year. So we didn't hear that there needed to be any substantive changes to our scope of work, but we did make some quality of life adjustments to it and re-release the RFP when we felt the timing would be a little bit more opportune for prospective bidders. So that was released in November of this last year. And we held a workshop with a solicitation which was well attended. And also fielded inquiries from the public, any prospective bidders that might have been interested, and did our best to make sure that any prospective bidders had access to all the information they would need to be able to successfully bid. That process has closed as of the 23rd of this month. We set a deadline for receiving bids, and we've received multiple responses. So we're happy to see that. And we're currently have a committee of diverse stakeholders pulled together to review those responses. And we'll hopefully be able to select a successful candidate from that pool with more information to share as that process continues to unfold. What the operations analysis is actually looking to accomplish, quite some time ago, LTD used to have a much more lengthy mission statement than we currently have. And we noted it could sometimes be difficult or challenging for even employees that work here for some time to say, have you memorized and can you recite what we do? What's our mission? So I think it's really positive that we've made that kind of more of a not just a bite-sized piece of information that we can not only all know ourselves, but communicate to the public. But I think just kind of clearly talks about who we are and what we do. The way I've always thought about it is that we help people get where they need to go. And more specifically, my role, I'm working to help older adults and people with disabilities get where they need to go. So the ride source operations analysis is focused on our services particularly at the RideSource call center and related operations, to be able to do just that. And so we're looking for assistance from consultants to help us better be able to implement incremental change. So we get a lot of feedback that people are both really happy with the services we provide to our community, that people choose to move here because of services like what we offer through our RideSource call center, that people, access to transportation is just a fundamental need, particularly for people with disabilities, to be able to maintain independent and fulfilling lives. So we're always happy and thrilled to not only be able to do that work, but to share that with others who are interested in doing the same. And I think oftentimes throughout the country, people look to us as kind of serving as a benchmark that other communities can help emulate. That doesn't mean that we're satisfied with what we're doing, and we feel that we can always do better. So I think we're constantly looking to do incremental and continual improvement. And part of that we see as our due diligence is doing something like this operations analysis to be able to help us both better understand what we're currently doing and what we could be doing differently or better. Certainly we've seen throughout the pandemic that the world is going to be and is a different place than we've ever experienced before. So part of that is we need to adjust to what a new normal is. Technology is changing very quickly. We need to find ways to be able to adapt. We don't always need to be on the bleeding edge, but we do need to take advantage of technologies as they become available to make our lives easier. And we need to evaluate and make decision points. So as you hear with things with the comprehensive operations analysis, one common decision point in our fixed route service is this idea of frequency versus span. So we can't be all things to all people, but how can we serve the greatest good, or how do we best kind of uphold our community values? Well, in RideSource, it's a slightly different value proposition. And the best way I can describe it is we need to be intentional and mindful about who and where we serve. So on our fixed route service, when we have a bus going around town, we need to pay for that bus. And there's not a substantive cost difference for us if another person decides to ride. If one more person at one more stop decides to get on that bus, we're still paying for the gasoline, we're still paying for the driver, we're still paying for the infrastructure. However, on RideSource, we're paying a premium for every single trip that takes place through the RideSource call center. These are trips that happen on demand. And so we are especially dispatching a vehicle just for that person and just for that trip. And so there's an advantage to us to be able to have our fixed route system be as accessible for older adults and people with disabilities as possible. So we both have a financial incentive, and it helps to create independence for older adults and people with disabilities. So we see accessibility as a win for everyone. And fixed route bus service isn't going to be able to serve every person within our community. And we need to make sure that RideSource provides a paratransit service to assist those who aren't able to access fixed route bus. So to do that as effectively as we can, we're looking to enlist the aid of consultants to accomplish six different tasks that we've specified in a scope of work. So first, and perhaps most importantly, is a public involvement plan. So as I've heard committee members here already note, how important it is and critical that we have stakeholder engagement to be able to make sure that the public feels included and has a say in the services that we're providing to best serve them. So we are looking to consultants to both develop and implement a robust public involvement plan, which will involve communication back and forth between staff, members of the public, key stakeholders, ensuring that we're able to best meet community needs. So we have an idea of what that means, but we also need to be hearing that clearly from the people that we're serving, as well as the people that we may not yet be serving. The second key milestone or takeaway that we're looking for is an environmental scan. So that means is just really finding a baseline analysis of performance, as well as the resources that we have available to us. So we have several different ways that we can do that, but essentially we need to make sure that we're establishing both baseline metrics that we're basing informed decisions off of, as well as ensuring that we know both the totality of what we're doing now, as well as what we either could be doing, or to be able to make decisions about changes to existing programs and services. So this gets very complicated very quickly. We do a lot. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it involves many different governments, nonprofit agencies, local resources, all working together to coordinate services. And oftentimes these have been added on throughout the years into what's now our kind of comprehensive resource center. So taking a step back and doing a scan of both what we're doing as well as across the country, what on nationwide are the different types of trends. And so that leads us into our third milestone is a comparison with our peers and of different challenges, best practices, what are other agencies doing? And so that includes both what's happening in Oregon, what's happening with other transit districts of a similar size as us. We have comparator institutions, such as through the American Bus Benchmarking Group, other groups, that we want to do comparisons of different types of metrics, including things like customer satisfaction, cost, how much is it costing us per trip or per call, what types of services that we're providing. We typically do those a bit differently than we've seen in other communities. And we want to be able to not only have, I think, comparators, but to be able to use those to make decisions. If we find that we're doing things wildly or vastly different than other communities, sometimes that's in a good way. Other times we need to take a closer look and make some decisions. So I think that helps us kind of compile and collate that information, which will be fairly broad in nature is what we've requested. The next milestone that we're looking at is a program investment tool. So once we've gathered that data, we want to put together in probably the closest analog to that would be a scorecard, or a way to be able to actually rate or rank that kind of data. So once we've collected it, how do we actually use it? So to be able to then achieve goals, objectives, and tie that back to either our strategic performance or our strategic business plan. So the next milestone is to culminate into a formal final report. So that's just to synthesize all of this information into one document that we can then look to compile all this work that we're looking to take place over the course of approximately 1 year, though we've scoped this out with additional time as necessary, up to 2 years to be able to do this effectively. So we're really looking for this final report to be both comprehensive and to be done well rather than quickly. We also included an additional milestone. So you might think the final report has some finality to it, but we actually have one additional task that we've done, which is to include a sixth milestone of strategic questions and concepts explored. You may be more familiar with this as kind of a parking lot or things that may not have been addressed as part of the original process. So we're fully anticipating that we'll get some recommendations, comments, feedback, of things that we may not be able to immediately address, but that doesn't mean that they need to be left unaddressed. And so that's where I think we look to making sure that those important takeaways aren't forgotten. And they may not be on, say, our 1 year timeline, but they may need to be part of our larger strategic efforts. And so we want to make sure that those can get captured and encapsulated as well. So if we're doing the hard work of getting out in the community and getting this feedback, we want to make sure that that's being documented and captured. And even if it isn't immediately implemented, that it's on our radar. I also just wanted to note some of the different types of topics that we're looking to explore further. So you've heard me talk in general about what we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to accomplish it. But in kind of more of the on the ground or real world application of that, we currently work with an interconnected network of both contractors, subcontractors, governments, staff within LTD. And those are, whether intentional or unintentional, decisions that have been made along the way over many, many years. And so we can actually evaluate what's the right way or ratio. What are the types of things that we should make sure can be included in-house? What are the things that would be of the best value to be able to contract out? Really just evaluate that on a more comprehensive basis. Another important decision is our relationship with Medicaid. So we've noted that our non-emergency medical transportation has grown considerably over the years, and especially within Oregon. And so that's come with considerable additional expenses as part of what are known as the CCO 2.0 requirements, or the evolution of Medicaid within Lane County in the state of Oregon. And that isn't necessarily something that we're required to do, but we choose to, and we find that there's some wonderful both efficiencies and benefits for our communities to be able to provide that. But that's something that we should be intentional about evaluating and making decisions on a regular basis, as well as where we need to either change or evolve our relationships with, say, our coordinated care agencies, our contractors, et cetera. One other important decision point on our horizon is what the right size of our fleet is. So we've undergone a fleet procurement plan. We need to do things such as decide what's the right size and shape of the vehicles we use to serve the public, what type of fuel types, emissions types that we're evaluating. There are advantages and disadvantages to larger and smaller vehicles. And we've seen that change over time. So I would say pre-pandemic, we had our fleet primarily consisting of large cutaway style vehicles. Once we started looking at things like social distancing, being able to have the necessity of disinfecting and quarantining vehicles, that became a little bit more challenging. We've also noted that during inclement weather events, or just based on the destinations that were requested to provide pickups, sometimes a more agile style vehicle that can go more places or have a sharper turning radius can be an advantage. So those are all types of things that we should be evaluating, as well as how that impacts, say, our maintenance schedule, estimated vehicle useful service life. Based on fuel type, how long can it be on the road before we have to swap it out for another vehicle? How that impacts the overall fleet size. These are all important decisions that, based on data and analysis and community feedback, we can make informed decisions on. That in turn requires things like facilities upgrades. So different fuel types require different improvements to our parking lot located at Second and Garfield. We also have run into limitations on the physical space that we have. So as more people call us, as our community continues to grow, we need more people to pick up the phones, more people to schedule trips, more administrative employees. And we find that our facilities at the RideSource call center have been limited in being able to do that, as well as having just space for things like training. Being able to have staff meetings. So our use of physical space and facilities upgrades is another key component that we'll need to look at. We also need to look at how we leverage technology. This is in many different ways. So not only from the databases that we use to store information, which can include information of the most confidential nature, to how we're implementing apps on people's phones to be able to schedule trips, things like mobility on demand and mobility as a service, the use of things like TNCs, like Uber and Lyft or others, how we're utilizing technologies that may just either be on the cusp or may not exist yet. So making sure that we're evaluating how we're best able to allow people to use technology and for us as a transit district to benefit from that and to be able to serve more people. So a good example is we're currently in the process of implementing an online scheduling option. Currently, up to this point, the only way that someone's been able to book a trip at our RideSource call center has been to call and speak to a person, to be on hold as long as that's necessary. And that doesn't always work well for all people. And having an online scheduling option both take some of the pressure off of being able to serve people during peak service hours, as well as just giving people more options, which particularly winds up being great for people with disabilities who can directly benefit from having alternatives to having one primary scheduling option. We've noticed that even in areas where we've dedicated significant intention and our attention and budget, there's areas where we need to be able to improve. One of those, I'll just use an example, is our ability to pick up the phone quickly. Nobody wants to be on hold for a long period of time before you can speak to a human being. And it's been important to us to be able to do that. What we've noticed is that similar to being able to hire operators as well as other employees, this isn't a problem unique to Lane Transit or Oregon. This has been a nationwide issue. Hiring and retaining call takers has been a bit of a challenge. We've also run into hiccups while trying to implement technology to allow more employees to work remotely. So these are just some of the types of issues that we're looking to perform a more in-depth analysis and use that to make directions on where we might go moving forward. Finally, I think we're looking at how we can perform the greatest good. So that's just recognizing there's a finite amount of resources and we need to make administrative decisions on who we're going to serve and how. So again, kind of tying us back to Ryan Source's version of the frequency versus span argument. How do we make those types of decisions? And I think that's where we come back to first, communicating well with the public and making sure that we're doing a great job of listening and making sure that everyone has a ability to come to the table. Doing that environmental scan, so seeing not just what we're doing, but what others are doing, to be able to use that to collate data and compare that to benchmarks, to be able to develop a scorecard or program investment tool to analyze that data. And then finally, we'll come back with some recommendations on the direction we might go from there. So currently we're in the very early phase of all of this. We haven't even chosen our consultant at this point in time, but I wanted to lay the foundation knowing that we'll be back. So at this point in time, this is just a very early kind of introduction to what we're hoping to accomplish. But with plenty more to come. And I also want to be available if members of the committee had any questions.
Have we ever done this kind of analysis before? It's the most comprehensive that I can be, that I'm aware of. But
that's a great question. So historically, we have done things like this, and oftentimes they've been paired with versions of, say, of a comprehensive operations analysis. And so many times we've paired these things together and we've said, well, we want you to a consultant to analyze everything. However, the challenge is that rarely are we going to find someone who has expertise in everything that we're doing. So we want to be very intentional about saying we want someone to focus very squarely on what we're doing at RideSource and independently of an analysis of our other operations. So there's some decisions and expertise that we're looking for that's very specific to how we do things like paratransit, NEMT, and some of the related services that we do. So we're going about it in a different way, but I wouldn't say that we've never done it before. We've certainly found it to be important to do routine kind of self-evaluation to be open to the constructive criticism that will help us be better and to better serve our public. But I think what's new is that we're looking to do that very specifically and independently with just a very laser-like focus on RideSource. It'll certainly be complementary to the comprehensive operations analysis. And I imagine there'll be a fair amount of back and forth and overlap, but we're looking for a final report that's very directly targeted towards what we're doing at the RideSource Call Center.
Go ahead. Greg, go ahead.
I'm interested. I want to reel back just a little bit here in terms of the type of vehicles that we're looking at adding to the fleet or taking away from the fleet. Are we talking about smaller vehicles like 30-foot coaches versus the 40-foot or 60-foot buses that we already have in service now? Do we want more of those smaller coaches? Are we looking for, you know, basically the same size and same type of coaches? Are we looking at more electric vehicles? Or are we still looking at more clean diesel vehicles?
That's such an important part of this conversation. I'm so happy you brought that up. So I think it's absolutely critical that we evaluate all those questions. And I'll note, as a community, we need to look at everything really comprehensively, in that people have a lot of different options oftentimes on how they're going to get from one place to another. And LTD often plays a big role in that, or at the very least a decision that gets made, even if that's, do I use a personal vehicle or access public transit for many of our members of the public. I'll note that on our fixed route bus system, we're often utilizing 40-foot and 60-foot buses. For our ride-source services, for our ADA paratransit, we've primarily and historically typically used 25-foot cutaways. These allow us to go more places than, say, a 40-foot bus is able to, so it can turn a little bit better. It can go down some alleys that, say, a larger bus can't. But it can't go everywhere, and there are some limitations. We notice going up hills, snow and ice is a problem. There can be some issues around being able to get in certain locations that we'd like to go. For our non-emergency medical transportation, we're often relying on medical transports, minivans that typically would allow somebody to bring on a mobility device, and taxi sedans to be able to perform those trips. They all have their pros and cons. So it is nice to be able to have the flexibility to do shared rides as needed. There are certainly times where we need to take one person to one location and there's no one else in that area and needs to go there. We also have some specialty vehicles. So our shopper service, which helps older adults do grouped shared ride trips. We actually use a 30-foot bus for that, which is just big enough to be able to both carry a group of older adults to do their shopping, as well as take all their groceries home and all their shopping with them. So I think we've been evaluating, as vehicles continue to evolve and fuel types continue to evolve, what's right for us and our community. We have to take into account things like weather, geography, where people are going, how long we want the vehicle to be on the road for, and all of those. I think there's some different pros and cons based on the different vehicle sizes and vehicle types that we incorporate in our fleet. So we currently have over 50 25-foot cutaways in our RideSource internal fleet. And then we utilize a couple of hundred of private vehicles as part of our external fleet to support Medicaid transportation. So within that, I think we're looking at, we know what we've done historically, but what would the right size and shape of our vehicle fleet be if we could really kind of look from the outside in? Are we making the right decisions there? And so I'm not coming with the answers to that, but I am noting that that's the question we intend to ask, or one of the questions that we intend to ask as part of the RideSource operations analysis. So
let me ask one other question to follow up on that. So we have about 50 25-foot cutaways. Then how many 40-foot buses are we running, and then how many 60-foot buses are we running? We have running roughly around 112 buses.
I'll look to the team if anyone happens to have that off the top of their head.
And the reason why, one of the reasons why I'm asking is the maintenance piece and the life span of those vehicles, because usually from my time on the board, we were looking at vehicle lifespan running around 12 years to 14 years with good maintenance. But because of cutbacks and you know, various challenges in buying new vehicles and buying new equipment, we were starting to run buses out to 16, 18 years. Are we still in that mode?
That's a really great follow-up. So I can speak to the RideSource portion. So the vehicles that we've got that are cutaways, the 25-foot vehicles, those typically we're looking at an estimated useful service life of around 7 years, depending on how they're classed. That doesn't mean that at exactly 7 years that they're auctioned and disposed of. Typically, we'll look to try and stretch the useful service life of a vehicle as long as we can. However, what we notice is that the longer we get past the estimated useful service life, the more expensive that repairs become and preventative maintenance is. So that it can start to include things like engine rebuilds and replacements, transmissions start to go out. And then at a certain point, we just realize that we're not just throwing money into vehicles, but things are just breaking faster than we can keep up with that. So the estimated useful service life typically includes when we should start thinking about replacement vehicles. Our 40 and 60 foot vehicles happen to be on a different timeline, and each class of vehicle has its own estimated useful service life schedule. So I'm just going to speak to the ride source portion. And if we have additional information on our fixed route side, I'd be happy for anyone to share. We can come back to the committee with that. We've got our fleet team has that information at the ready.
Okay. If I could, Madam Chair, Jameis Naughton, Chief Executive, just want to speak a little bit to Councilor Evans' question on fleet. And I appreciate that question. One of the processes that we're going through is a fleet assessment. We have a goal to have, I believe, 30 fully electric vehicles in our fleet. Fleet size right now on fixed route is approximately 110. And I'll go back and get you harder numbers on this. One of the challenges that we have is, or that we're assessing rather, is the fuel source. So we have a goal for to protect our climate. I think everyone recognizes the pristine environment in which we live, and we want to make sure that we protect that. However, we are looking at what is the real long-term financial sustainability of going to a zero emissions fleet. Part of the issue is that the fixed route buses that Councilor Evans was talking about is really a two-for-one replacement schedule for our diesel vehicles. Now, I know diesel is not a popular fuel right now, but the diesel blend that we use is R99, which is renewable diesel. 99% of it is sourced from plant sources and other sources, so it's very environmentally friendly. So when we look at the replacement schedule on our 40-foot buses, that's the 12-year federal replacement schedule when we're using FTA funds. And yes, Councilor Evans, we do have some vehicles that we just can't replace. We continue to maintain that, go well beyond that 12 years. As money becomes available, we look to replace those. However, the bigger challenge that we're going to have is what is the right vehicle size that reflects the service model that we look at? Part of what Tom's group is looking at is service models. We know over the past 5-6 years, there have been emerging models that we're starting to dabble in some areas and doing a good job in those areas. But what are the right fits for our communities that we serve? So the question of vehicle size is one that we're looking at. And also the question of vehicle propulsion type is a question that we're looking at as well. Our goal is to give good, solid information to this committee and the board based on what's available and how we can use that, and then chart a course on how we achieve those goals. Full disclosure, you know, where the technology sits and where we are in terms of service, we may have to have a conversation around our climate action plan to make sure that it's realistic based on the technology. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation, and hopefully that was impactful. We will go back and make sure the information, the approximate information I gave you is actual by the next time we meet. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, are there any other additional questions we have for John?
You know, if I could just take the opportunity to add to this, I always like to try and make connections between the various things that the committee is working on. And I just note, you know, we are starting up a COA. We are doing the right source analysis as well. But we've also been working on a mobility management strategy, and the committee's heard an update on that as well. And I just say, you know, as we start to look forward, you can see we're thinking and operating actually in a I'll say a multimodal from a transit standpoint way, and that mobility management strategy starts to way large in terms of providing a useful framework to move forward strategically.
Thank you, Tom. All right. If there are no further questions for John, appreciate your time and sharing with us. And again, kind of reflecting on Tom's support as well, like how everything fits together. And I think that's really helpful. And again, I did hear what Mr. Otten said about discussing our climate action plan and how everything is looking at the ecosystem and how each piece fits together. So I really appreciate that. And I think for our committee, that's especially helpful. So thank you.
Thank you for listening and for all the thoughtful questions.
Yeah, wonderful. All right. Next, we have Andrew with our performance reporting update.
Thanks. So really just here to start a discussion with you all, probably the first of several conversations we'll have. So the backstory on this is that until last year, I think probably dating back to the 90s is my best information. We've had this board report that we reported some ridership information, some service information, and from time to time, financial information. That was included in the packet. It really wasn't useful. And I say that from experience talking with members of the community who didn't know it was even there in many cases, talking with board members, and we have some former board members here, so I'm curious on your opinions, but it was also a really error-prone process. It was kept in an Excel file that's why I believe it's back to the 90s, because it's actually not even a modern Excel format. It has to be kept in the old format. And there's a lot of really great data in there because we've been tracking the same thing since the 90s. But the flip side of that is that LTD staff, over time, as we got new reporting systems, we would go and we would basically save a PDF out of the maintenance reporting system, copy and paste some numbers into an Excel, go to the finance system, print out a PDF, copy and paste some data to an Excel sheet. And so it's not hard to picture, as we do this from a bunch of different sources every month, we have a couple of people who know how to do this, that occasionally an error gets made that we then later have to go back and correct. And then it's all based on a bunch of formulas. It's not an ideal way to do that reporting. Took a lot of staff time for what we were getting. And as I mentioned, I've never heard it called super useful. We have had people ask questions about it, and it was one of the main ways that we were transmitting certain types of information to the public, right? It's not just for our board, it's also for the public so that they understand how LTD is doing. And so we wanted to reboot that, but do that in a really deliberate way. And so rather than basically recreating it in a slightly better format with a slightly better process, we've kind of been working as staff to say, hey, like what's the important information that our community really needs to know? What's the information our board needs to know to ask the right questions to get the type of service they want, to see that the agency is doing a good job and to feel confident in staff's approach? What is that information? And then on the other side of it, how do we develop a process that eliminates all of that manual staff time, that eliminates the potential for error? I think we have a lot more advanced systems now in our IT department. We have a great IT team, and I think we're doing a lot better than we were in the late 90s. And we're also making some upgrades to our systems. And so it's a great time to think about how we can leverage our IT resources to tie those things together and make it a much better process. And so I have a handout that I've given people in person. I apologize, we didn't get it on the website, but this is part of when I say we're going to have an iterative conversation. For the SPC board packet, we had developed a pretty unattractive looking first pass, and I had to get that in your packet to start this conversation today. And we will get it on the website. It's going to be in the board packet for next month, our current iteration of this. It'll be for the upcoming board packet in 2 weeks, on the 15th, I believe. And so that has some information, and it's a good kind of start to where we're going, which is instead of just a wall of numbers, right? A wall of numbers doesn't tell you a story, right? If you're not really familiar with LTD service, you're not going to understand what that wall of numbers is actually telling you. And a great kind of story on this is a lot of times our maintenance dollars will fluctuate. And you heard just some discussion about our fleet and preventative maintenance and how long we maintain vehicles and being really strategic about when we spend the capital up front versus, you know, delaying that purchase, spending more on maintenance. And so one thing we do a lot is rebuild diesel engines, which is actually a really good thing. It saves us money in the long run to maintain our vehicles well. But sometimes you'd see these big spikes of like 80% in that report. And so month to month, you're looking at it and going, why did our maintenance costs go up 80%? But all we provided before was that wall of numbers. And so all you'd say is, wow, LTD must be doing a bad job. No, actually the story behind that is that this month we replaced a number of engines and we're going to save however many dollars in the long run. But this month it is up 80%. That's a good thing though. Over a 3-year period, it might be down, right? But that wasn't conveyed. And so with this approach, we're hoping to take a more, less wall of numbers, more contextual explanation. And so we don't just want to tell you ridership is at 42% below pre-pandemic levels, right? It's also important to know how much service is out there, right? If service is reduced by that much, well, then our productivity is the same. It's not, to be very clear, but our service levels are down considerably compared to pre-pandemic. And so our ridership, it's kind of expected to be down. And so that's our approach with this new report. It's not perfect. Not looking to necessarily critique this report specifically, we wanted to start a conversation with you on what you think we should be reporting on. What's the information that you all need to feel confident in providing advice to the board? What do you think the board should be focusing on in terms of metrics? And what are the things that we should be reporting to the public so that, you know, members of the public have a good idea of how well LTD is performing with our system? So with that, I really just here for your feedback. And would love to get some ideas. We, as I mentioned, probably can't do it today, but as we get our new finance system in place and as we work on other systems, we want to take a deliberate approach. And so starting early will let us keep that in mind as we go on this journey. And over the next year, 2 years, hopefully we can get something that works really well for this committee, the board, and our community.
Want to open up? Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you for trying to come up with a report that's going to be useful and help explain things a little better than what we've had in the past. It does seem to me that it's important that we get a fair amount of input on what it is we're going to measure. And we might even want to set some time aside in the next meeting to brainstorm some of those metrics. Because if we might be measuring stuff that doesn't matter very much. There may be things that we should be measuring that we don't think of unless we spend some energy and effort giving it some thought.
Yeah, that would be great if we could do that.
Councilor Evans, go ahead.
I'm interested in where we are in terms of rider satisfaction. Since the pandemic hit, are we doing specific surveys? I know that we do those things from time to time. Specific surveys that are assessing rider satisfaction, particularly with the service delivery and you know, how the base ridership, whether they be, you know, choice riders or transit dependent folks, our feeling about the system since we had a fall off in boardings and that kind of thing vis-a-vis the pandemic, and how that is beginning to, we're beginning to recoup some of that ridership currently, and where are our ridership in terms of satisfaction with service and service deliveries.
Thank you, Councilor Evans. Pat, go ahead and respond.
Thank you, Chair. Councilor Evans, LTD has recently completed a couple of studies, and I can share with you some just high-level results of those. In the fall, we completed a community value survey, which measured the community's perception of LTD, I mean, across the community. And what we found out through that study is that about 78% of the community believes that LTD is valuable and does a good job. in terms of ridership, you know, we participate annually in the American Best Bus Benching Group survey every year. Two things to note in that survey, which was completed last spring and presented to us by ABBG in the fall, is that overall, again, the community felt that we provided good to strong service, and we were at almost 70% there. Also, it's important to note that our net promoter score from the previous year had gone from a -4 to a +21. So overall, the community, we believe that we're beginning to certainly turn the corner in terms of how the community values LTD, and that includes our passengers as well. One of the things that we're working on as an agency through marketing is to bring all of our surveys together under one house so that we know when we're doing surveys, who we're surveying, and when we're doing it, and then we can share that information between us to not only ensure consistent messaging, but that we can determine what our goals and evaluation methods will be.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Any other questions? No.
So I think one of the things I always think about, so I really appreciate this. I think about access to this information. So there are multiple audiences, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, multiple audiences accessing kind of like what's going on with LTD and where are they at? And so and I think that's what I was hearing. We maybe have sort of report format for the board. We have a report format sort of for the SBC, which I think I'm assuming should be really similar. We should be looking at the same information. And then there's our community. And so to me, looking at access is really important because they're not using the same language that we're using. You know, I don't know how long I've been doing this on this board. I'm still like every day, like, okay, I got to write that down. I'm going to go make sure I understand completely how that fits. So I would love to like see how maybe we can take what we're learning from the community and then bring that back into this. So we know exactly what they're looking at and making sure we kind of have that alignment. So they might not need the full, all the details, but they need pieces of it. Access is really a big piece for me. Go ahead,
Mr. I'm so sorry. I can't sit in a meeting without talking for.
I love it.
Joe's laughing at me. So that's a great point. And you know, we talk about that a lot here. The folks that are in these walls understand transit in different ways than the folks that are outside of the walls. And the folks who ride the bus understand it differently than those who don't ride it. And those who don't have access to it, they understand a completely different way, if at all. So one of the things that we're looking at is how do we communicate performance, good or bad, in terms that the average person, whether they understand transit or not so much, can simply understand. If you think about Thanksgiving, right? You take what's on the center of the table, the big turkey, right? If you like turkey, the turkey's there. We're just going to assume everyone likes turkey. So the turkey's on the table. So that's what we're, how we're approaching our performance. Great point, Mr. Eister, on, you know, what is the right metric to report on? You know, some agencies, I think it was MTA New York, they were looking at on-time performance for a long time on their trains, where on-time performance wasn't really the measure. It was, you know, frequency or cleanliness was the thing that mattered the most. So identifying what are the metrics that matter the most in our community and how do we present those in easy to access, easy to understand ways. We are in the process of looking at this report that we're going to be sharing with the board and with the board committees. We're also in the process of looking at a public-facing dashboard that's aligned with our strategic business plan. Right now, we're going to introduce that at our work session tomorrow evening, but that's still going through a process to make sure that it's not clunky, if you will, that the information is easily understood. And there's some work to do on that. But that's where we're kind of starting, and we'll go ahead and streamline that. But that's our very goal, is to make sure that people can understand at a glance how LTD is doing on metrics that they have bought in on. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Responses? Oh, well, thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate this.
Thank you.
All right, well, it looks like, and again, we don't have a quorum today, so we weren't able to do an important piece of voting for officers. So I appreciate you all being here. Are there any other pieces that we need to talk about right now? Anything else that come up? Tom,
go ahead. I will say, so in your packet is the SPC, CATC committee merger, and then some updated SPC bylaws. But as I understand it, we're going to make some corrections to that or some additional changes. So they're not finalized yet.
We'll connect on that and bring that back.
Okay.
At a future meeting.
Great.
It sounds like we'd have to have a quorum to vote on them anyway. Would that be correct? Or are they?
Well,
I'm just trying to be.
Actually, that's we'll talk about the process.
Perfect. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
So this is totally unrelated to anything on the agenda tonight, but if we're at the part where we're talking about possible future discussions, it seems like every once in a while we have to ask ourselves, what would happen if we eliminated the fair? And I just heard a story recently on NPR about some committee that did it. I think you may have come from an organization that did that. And in the past, when it's come up, we've always said, oh my God, how are we going to fill that giant gap that will exist? But it seems like I don't see any urgency to that question, but it might be worth re-raising the question and getting some point and counterpoint conversation about it.
Thank you for the mic. I appreciate that. Tom, did you have a...
Nope.
I think one of the things that has come up from our community and also just for the opportunity for this committee, I'm glad we're talking about the merger between the two groups. I also want to think about how the bigger, we talk about the strategic business plan, and I'm very much like thinking form follows function. So if we're thinking about what are we measuring and talking about the metrics, I think that's also some more conversation around some of those deliverables for this committee. And so just thinking about some of those strategic metrics might be helpful for us to be looking and measuring against. And then we can think about, we can think about where things like fair, like addressing the fair, or that fits into everything too. So just wanting to have that open to kind of explore more opportunities for this committee to be able to support the board in some of those strategic directions and how that all fits together. So just love to open that up for a conversation as we go forward.
Great.
Anything else to be able to think of for future meeting discussions? I'm looking forward to, Councillor Evans, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on Mike's comment here. One of the things that we had talked about years ago, and I'm going back a ways, was whether or not continue with the fare box would be something that we would be looking at down the road during the future. And correct me if I'm wrong, we only get about, 17% of our revenue from the fare box. It would be great to have at some point some analysis that would look at what it would look like if we didn't have the fare box. What other sources of revenue would we be relying on? Will we increase the payroll tax to cover the gap? What other kinds of methods or ways that we would have to cover the gap? Would it be through a utility tax that could be spread out across the service district, across the county? Those are all issues. I think that this is a time in which, this committee and the fact that it's being consolidated, it should have a broader discussion about, because I know just to the north of us, Corvallis, Albany, they don't have a fare box. Maybe it's time for us to, take a deeper dive or a deeper look into what that would look like for the district, and B, would that be something that would enhance ridership and create a stronger service profile for the district?
Thank you, Councillor Evans. Any reflections, feedback on that? I would like to also just bring up again, thinking about the lack of quorum today, to talk about strategies or outreach to our other folks who weren't able to make it today. So I will be happy to reach out to folks and see how they can be best served by being able to attend this meeting. So just bringing that up for the record. Anything else from the?
I do know that Leonard Stair has resigned from the Springfield City Council because he's moving.
Oh, okay. So thank you.
I don't know if anybody has approached the City of Springfield about a new representative or not.
Thank you for that. And is that, again, just looking for our process, is that something that, who owns or who leads that charge of recruiting? Staff leads that? Okay, perfect. Lovely. Thank you. So you committed me to another committee. I think it's easier for staff to do that part. Just teasing.
All right.
And if anyone has other ideas or folks that we can be able to recruit, I think also thinking about, again, a lot of the work that we're doing to like listen to our community and be out in our community, think about who can be at this table that represents some of those committees, those community members and community groups would be really helpful too. So in the spirit of being able to end early, we really appreciate everyone's time here and being here with us. So we are going to go ahead and adjourn at 6:40. Thank you.